From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. First of all, special hello to Terry, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, from daughter Alisa. Alisa, of course, was part of the crew that taped our Ancient Aliens segment tonight. That's going to be on the History Channel a little bit later on. Next hour, the Sinatra Club. It's not what you think. Here's what's happening. Well, a newly discovered asteroid, it's called 2012 XE54, flying right through the Earth-Moon system now, approximately 140,000 miles from the planet. The space rock is about 36 meters wide, a little smaller than the Tunguska impactor that leveled 800 square miles off of Siberian forests back in 1908. Now, this asteroid will not hit the planet, but it is close enough and bright enough for amateur astronomers to track using backyard telescopes. Sad story in Portland, Oregon. A shooting at a mall has left three people dead, including the gunman and at least one other person. The gunman, described as an adult male, shot two people to death, also died of a self-inflicted gunshot. Police officers said police did not know or believe that there was a second shooter involved. A huge win for gun rights activists. A divided federal appeals court in Chicago tossed out the state's ban on carrying concealed weapons and gave Illinois' legislature 180 days to craft a new law legalizing concealed carry. John Lott, noted author, More Guns, Less Crime. John, this has been a long time in Illinois, so do you think this is finally going to become law?
It certainly looks that way. I mean, the state can go and appeal to the entire Seventh Circuit to ask them to review that, and they'll probably do it, but I doubt that would be accomplished in time to stop the 180 days. I don't think they'll grant an extension on that.
What?
I mean, it's pretty amazing. Illinois was the last state to ban completely people being able to carry concealed handguns.
What was the deciding reasons for the court?
Well, the court, the two-member majority, was saying that in Heller, they recognized that people had a right to keep and bear arms, and that bearing meant carrying, and that just as you can need self-defense inside your home, they said, if anything, it's probably even more true outside people's homes, that most murders are committed outside people's homes, and that the state had not proven its case by any means that there was a net danger to letting people be able to protect themselves with concealed handguns. The state was arguing that in order to protect people, they had to ban completely concealed carry, and the court obviously just wasn't willing to accept that logic.
John, Wednesday morning, of course, a number of people will be commenting about this situation in Portland, Oregon. We don't know too much about the shooter, the killer, but they will, of course, scream again that should not have guns. Now, in this case, he had a rifle, I think.
Right. Look, my understanding is that this case is just like the other cases. This mall had posted signs that had banned people being able to carry concealed handguns in the mall.
That's right, because Oregon is a concealed carry state.
That's exactly right. Well, there are 41 states that are right to carry states right now, and maybe 42 soon with Illinois. But, we'll learn more about this. It's a little bit early to be talking too much about it. But one thing I'll mention that's been back in the news is the Aurora movie theater shooting from this past summer.
Right.
One of the things I found out was that there were seven movies theaters showing the Batman movie within a 20-minute drive of the killer's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Of those, only one movie theater banned people being able to carry concealed handguns into the movie theater. The one he went to was that one. He didn't go to the closest movie theater. He didn't go to the largest one. There was one that had a theater showing the Batman movie that was over twice as large, that was the same distance from his apartment as the one he went to. And it's something that we just keep on seeing time after time. I wish the media, once in a while even, would go and report whether these events are occurring in gun-free zones, because with only one exception, all the multiple victim public shootings in the United States since 1950, in which more than three people have been killed, have all occurred in places where concealed handguns are banned. And you know, it's just too coincidental. At some point, people have to begin to recognize that these killers are trying to search out places where they don't have to worry about victims being able to defend themselves.
Exactly, John. Exactly. Thanks so much again, always. John Lott, his book, More Guns, Less Crime. North Korea launching a long-range rocket. A previous launch in April failed when the rocket broke up after takeoff. Not this time. North Korea says it plans to put a satellite into space, but many countries believe the tests are a cover for weapons development. What is going on here now? Instability in Egypt, where a newly elected Islamic government teeters over an angry population, is not enough to stop the United States, us, from sending more than 20 F-16 fighter jets as part of a $1 billion foreign exchange package. This, gotta tell you, does not make any sense at all. A notoriously mysterious military space plane operated by the United States Air Force has been launched from Florida. It's the third flight in a very secretive test program. The reusable unmanned craft is designed to orbit and operate in Earth orbit for extended periods. Its prior missions, 2010, 2011, lasted 224 days and 469 days. Young people are being warned about the dangers of using magnetic tongue studs after reports of serious medical emergencies. Now, some people have tongue piercings. That's not what I'm talking about. These are magnets. They hold the what appears to be a piercing on the top and bottom of the tongue. What's happening, people are accidentally swallowing the magnets, and they are sticking together in trapping parts of the intestine, and that means surgery. A 92-year-old woman with Alzheimer's was found with 57 maggots crawling in her ear while she was under the care of a nursing home, and it was costing the family $10,000 a month. The family of Catherine McMahon, they're now suing the home for negligence and emotional distress. Her 88-year-old husband said he spent his life savings paying for her to be looked after by the Lutheran Home for the Aged in Arlington Heights, Chicago. I don't know if you watched the television program on A&E, Storage Wars. Its star David Hester has filed a lawsuit against the network, contending that he was wrongfully terminated and that the highly rated series is rigged. In a complaint filed in Los Angeles Superior Court, Hester alleges that A&E has committed a fraud on the public and its television audience in violation of the Communications Act of 1934, which makes it illegal for broadcasters to rig a contest of intellectual skill with the intent to deceive the viewing public. We shall see. In the news at coasttocoastam.com, an incredible story about San Francisco's UFOs, whatever they may be, a cluster of UFOs spotted, captured on video, seen by multiple witnesses during a mysterious overflight of the oldest neighborhood in Northern California's leading financial and cultural center, Mission Impossible area. Let's get Peter Davenport on from the UFO Reporting Center. Peter, I took a look at this video. It truly looks like a large triangular-shaped object.
It sure does, George, and I'm very interested by this report, and I have to say quite relieved. As you and many of the regular Coast listeners know, I've been talking about this type of sighting for probably a year now. It's been going on for a year and a half, and I'm very pleased to see that somebody else is seeing these things and that they're reporting them and that they're making the press. We had another report from San Francisco, interestingly, 24 hours after the one that was featured in the news report, and reports like this one are coming in on a regular basis. I have no explanation for them, George. Some of them may be due to so-called sky lanterns or Chinese lanterns, but very few of them. We just had a case in Blackfoot, Idaho on Saturday night, December 8th, and it appears that it may have been due to 50 sky lanterns released at a wedding ceremony. But most of them are very, very bizarre, and I'm very pleased to see them making their way into the press finally.
Peter, give out the website of the UFO Reporting Center.
Website is ufocenter.com. 9 letters, 1 word. UFOCENTER. Very simple. UFOCenter.com. And I would make a request that if anybody's seen any of these clusters of lights, please submit a written report, a detailed written statement, and we will post it to let the world and the Coast listeners know what's going on. It's very important to get a written report.
And your mailing address is P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, 99122, correct?
Right. Correct, and Davenport is a coincidence. Same as my last name.
You own the city.
I'm not the emperor there yet.
not yet. Thank you so much, Peter. In a moment, we're going to Mars, a fossil hunter's guide to Mars with Sir Charles Schulz III on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Sir Charles Schulz worked at Martin Marietta Aerospace for 10 years on weapon systems and computer-based automated test equipment. He has been looking at Mars. He's been looking at artifacts and fossils for some time, and he's got a doozy of a story for us now. Charles, welcome back.
Thank you, George. It's always a pleasure.
So what is Curiosity that's roving around Mars? What's it doing these days?
Well, it's been doing a lot of analysis of mineral structures and soil chemistry, and they've been spending a few weeks at Rock's Nest looking at chemistry in the soil there, and people were very excited about the shiny objects that they found. We still haven't heard an analysis result on that, only on the dust and soil around them. But just recently, in the last couple of days, I've seen some fascinating pictures. They've discovered something that looks very much like the fossil of a trunk of a plant or the stem of a kelp organism. As we know, this is the bottom of a saline lake from long ago, the bottom of a very an oceanic sort of an environment. And so they found a number of these shapes all in the same area, just a few meters from the Rock's Nest site where they found the organic signatures just a few days ago.
Now, when you say it looks like a tree trunk, I mean, is it high or is it low? What's it look like?
It is a circular feature, and it has a circular interior. So think of a circle within a circle or a cylinder within a cylinder. It's eroded, and it's sticking through the rock of the lake bottom. And there are a number of them in very close proximity. If you look at the images on the NASA site, you will see what appears to be the trunk of an object sticking through the soil, worn down, and in the center of it, a smaller circular trunk, exactly in the middle.
Okay, this is exciting stuff. We're going to have your pictures on our Twitter feed shortly, Charles. I mean, when you look for these artifacts, how do you spot them so quickly, or does it take you time?
It does take time, and that's because there are so many hundreds of images to go through in any given week. And I'm keeping track of the old rover, Opportunity, as well as the new one, Curiosity. And what I find most fascinating about this is when we go to the Spirit rover, the very first one they put on Mars back in 2004, there is an identical structure, exactly the same, on Sol 7. And I've included an image of that for your viewers to see when those are posted. So we've got something that occurs all over the planet. It's something that occurs many times, and it is a circle within a circle. And the only thing that really comes to mind is that it's either the remains of something organic, very similar to perhaps something in a kelp forest or some sort of a tree or plant organism, or something that was formed by growing in a circle, similar to organisms known as stromatolites. For me, I think it's the larger, kelp or tree remain. So this is very interesting because minerals don't normally grow in this form, and to find so many examples so close together is really telling us something. I think this is like the 800-pound gorilla in the room that so many people are ignoring. We haven't heard a single word from NASA about this yet. I realize they've only been in the images for the last couple of days with Curiosity, but even early on in the mission with Spirit and with Opportunity finding things like this, nothing was said. And there are a couple of particular objects that they've discovered over the course of these missions that nobody has said anything about. And you know, we've reached a point where they've asked a lot of questions about presence of carbon molecules, mm-hmm. you know, carbon-containing molecules. And it's interesting because the instrument that is supposed to be doing the analysis is now said to have perhaps contaminated the sample and produced results that can't be confirmed. This is very, very interesting because if I were going to send an instrument and then claim that it was such a sensitive and useful instrument, I would be very, very certain that it didn't contaminate what I was trying to study.
Exactly. Now, would Curiosity be able to study the tree trunks?
Very easily. They're well within reach. They only have to move a few inches in any direction to get the instruments directly over them. And with so many cameras aboard that rover, they certainly have gotten some very interesting and good pictures of it. So it wouldn't take very much, simply somebody on the team saying, hey, let's do an analysis here. They have the ability to identify minerals, soil samples. They have the also very similar ability to use instruments to shoot particles at the things and see what sort of signatures come back. So they can take radiation particles, strike the elements in the soil or in the stones, and they can measure the signatures coming back and tell you what elemental composition there is.
Assuming they were trees, assuming we had other fossils and little animal life on Mars, what do you think happened to that planet, Charles? What killed it?
It's right now in an ice age, and of course it's had a very poor environment, probably through most of its history. It is a very small world, does not have much gravity, and our atmosphere and our oceans depend on volcanic activity to replace them as they're being lost to space. Mars really doesn't have much volcanic activity and probably has not had a great deal in the recent history.
No, that's absolutely true. But I picture the planet as a little Earth, you know, with oceans and with vegetation, maybe animal life, maybe intelligent life, who knows? And then something catastrophic happened.
Well, that's possible. But, you know, a lot of people point out that Mars is much closer to the asteroid belt than the Earth is, and so that it has certainly been battered a lot more. We can see many impact craters over its entire surface. It very much looks like the moon, except it's red-orange. However, a planet as small as Mars doesn't have the type of energetic impacts that the Earth has. If you double the amount of gravitation a planet has, things will accelerate and strike it with approximately four times as much energy from a standing start. So you can see that a small planet like Mars, even getting hit with a larger asteroid, wouldn't have quite as much damage per se as one striking the Earth. So, you know, the balance can swing either way. A larger planet has higher energy impacts when things hit it, and smaller ones have lower energy impacts.
Charles, if these fossils of tree trunks aren't what you think they are, then what could they be?
Well, I've thought about that, and I considered it possible that if you had a spring or some flow of mineral-containing water from underground, it may have formed a similar channel. But the one thing that discounts that for me is that in the ones that I've seen, there's always a smaller central circle inside. I would expect a hydrothermal vent or geyser vent to leave a crust around the outside, not necessarily circular, where in this case we've got a perfectly round device with another perfectly round device dead center in it. And that's almost a dead giveaway for something in biology.
You would think. I mean, is it possible that a pebble-sized asteroid or meteorite hit directly and created a little crater?
Well, while that can happen, it wouldn't leave that sort of a remain behind, because we see evidence of craters all over the planet, and none of them look like that. So it would be very odd to have a number of similar impacts right within a few meters of each other. That, more or less, is probably a bed of roots from a series of organisms.
When do you think the planet died?
I would say that most of the life probably disappeared within the last 50,000 years or so.
That's all?
Yes, because it's going through an ice age right now, and we can see that changes in its climate happen quite often. As the pole of the planet wobbles around, the climate changes dramatically in just a few tens of thousands of years.
Do you think they had oceans 50,000 years ago?
I don't know if it had oceans, but I am very certain that there was a great deal of surface water. We can see a lot of evidence even today that there's water flowing in some areas.
Might they have had grass and weeds and things like that?
Well, that's possible, but it really depends on the atmosphere. You know, there's a big puzzle standing on Earth as to why things didn't come out of our oceans earlier in the history when there was plenty of life in the oceans and not on the land. And the answer is really very simple. Up until a certain time, there wasn't enough oxygen in the atmosphere to form an ozone layer, which would protect things that would live on the land. Now, Mars had a very thin atmosphere, and it might not have ever had a really effective ozone layer. So that would really limit a lot of its life to an oceanic environment and not the surface.
Other areas in this solar system as interesting as Mars to you?
Quite a few, and I think that to me, one of Saturn's moons, Enceladus, which is spouting liquid water and organic molecules, is an excellent place to look for something really interesting. Two of the moons of Jupiter, Europa and Ganymede, show spectral signatures very similar to the bacterial growth that we've seen on Earth, and they are known to contain icy shells that seem to house liquid oceans. So those would be excellent places to look for life, which is very similar, perhaps, in some cases, to the things we found in the Antarctic lakes that are buried under the ice.
Good point. Charles, we're going to come back, take some phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And you're back listening to Coast with Sir Charles Schulz III. We're talking about A Fossil Hunter's Guide to Mars, and he spots some more incredible things on Mars. What do you think of Saturn's moon Titan, Sir Charles?
It's a fascinating place, and one of the things that it really tells us when you look at it, as thick as its atmosphere is and as unusual an environment as it is, methane doesn't have to come from biology. It can come from geology. The methane in Saturn's atmosphere is 1.5 times thicker than our atmosphere is on Earth. It's an astounding place.
Well, all this methane that is there, I mean, could that be potentially used as fuel?
Well, it could, but the cost of getting it back and the energy yield from it would be terrible. If you were to go to Mars, I mean, I'm not Mars, Titan, and try to use methane as fuel, you'd have to carry, for instance, oxygen with you. If you had the ability to get there, you'd probably be using something a lot more advanced than burning chemistry.
NASA appears to hold back on giving us information. I mean, why couldn't they even say with these pictures that we're posting on Twitter that you supplied us of these what could be trees? Why don't they say something about that?
You know, it's amazing to me that they have at least two clear anomalies that they don't say anything about, no matter what. They've said nothing about it, and it's time to call someone to responsibility about it. The agency is using our tax dollars to operate and send the missions, and there's barely an answer to many of the questions that have been asked. I can't even tell you why, but they haven't even explained why there's 10 times more humidity in the Martian atmosphere than they say theory should support. So that's just one example. The tree-like things, these stump-like things, are pretty outstanding, clearly something beyond geology. And another thing that comes to my mind is those rind objects that I went on about for a number of years. They're clearly a something that looks like a seashell fragment or something of that order. And yet, with all of them all over the planet, nobody has said a word about it. So clearly somebody's telling somebody not to say anything.
Let's go to the phones with the Sir Charles. We'll go to Jay in Bay City, Michigan, to get things going. Hey, Jay, go ahead.
The other day you had someone else on talking about the rover and asking him if contamination could be brought. And he said no, because we always get stones and stuff from Mars. And nothing's wrong with them. I wanted to ask, how did the stones escape the gravity of Mars to get here?
Well, that's a simple thing. When, you know, first of all, let's talk about that for a second, and contamination, Sir Charles. When the meteors, they get blasted off the planet, that's how they get here, right?
Well, that's right. When a large enough impact occurs, it can literally blast things into space. This even happens on the Earth. We have stones on the Earth called tektites that were caused when impacts blasted material off our planet and into space, and some of them would re-enter again. On a small planet like Mars, an impact large enough to blast a stone off the planet can happen fairly often, and we have a number of Martian meteorites on the Earth that are evidence of that.
Now, how does contamination occur? I would think that everything would die off, but maybe not.
Well, in some cases, you would expect that the stone itself would be burned so badly, being blasted into space and then re-entering when it strikes the Earth, that it would destroy all life in it. And you would think that in most cases that's true, but oddly enough, many meteorites, when they land on the ground and are found right away, are icy cold inside because they've lost much of their heat in transit. So it's quite possible for something to survive those conditions for extended periods of time. And typically it will take millions of years for something from Mars to reach the Earth when it's sent in the natural method like an impact.
Off to Santa Clara now. It's Edward's turn. Good morning, Edward. Take it away.
Yeah, I was just wondering if your guests might think that those structures on the Sidonia region of Mars may have been made by some type of intelligent life form.
Ah, that's one of Richard Hoagland's favorite spots, Sir Charles. What do you think of Cydonia?
It certainly is, and what I see is what appears to be a glacier or a sheet of ice under there that's eroding away slowly, and the overburden of soil is slumping down the sides to make it look like pyramids and structures. There are even similar structures in the Antarctic regions here on Earth.
Do you think it's possible that Mars possessed intelligent life at one time?
If there were ever any intelligent life on Mars, my feeling is it came from somewhere else and not from Mars. I don't think there was enough diversity in its environment to support intelligent life.
So it landed there if it came there at all?
If there was ever intelligent life there, it had to come from somewhere else.
Houston, Texas. Mike, it's your turn. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, George. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Question for Sir Charles. So say these structures, it turns out they are organic. How does that change NASA's mission? How does NASA change its policy? And also, if we do find that these are organic life forms, we've found the aliens, does that support anything like panspermia or any other theories like that?
That's a really good question. First of all, panspermia was first theorized by an astronomer, Fred Hoyle, many years ago. And the thought is that life could have started somewhere and spread all through space, either in the form of bacteria or other forms, and could have reached other worlds and taken root there. And it's a reasonable theory. We can see how organisms can be carried from one planet to another. And the other thought, what would it change in NASA if they discovered that these were indeed organic structures, and they acknowledged that? I would think that the very first thing that would happen is there'd be a spate of new instruments and missions lined up, and the second would be that they would be much, much more careful about sterilizing spacecraft as they send them, and perhaps very cautious about bringing samples back, which is, everybody knows, is one of my pet worries, that they would bring something back and contaminate the planet.
Do you think they contaminated these samples on Mars?
You know, some people have thought that organisms from Earth did contaminate the samples, and that chemistry from the rover analyzer might have contaminated the samples. If organisms from Earth were brought to Mars, there are a handful of them that could survive there, even given the conditions that exist today. So we could very easily find some earthly organisms that have been carried there, transplanted, and survived. But if, you know, things like the analyzer concentrating chlorine and carbon in there, and carbon not coming from Mars but the Earth, that's something that's going to be hard for them to answer. They do feel that the contamination is from Earth and it's not Martian carbon, for example. We'll only find out in time.
Let's go to Las Vegas. It's Murray's turn. Go ahead, Murray, west of the Rockies.
Hey, George. Hello, Dr. Schultz.
Hey.
You know, I'm so glad that I caught the show tonight, because a couple of nights ago, me and a couple of friends were watching, I think, Richard Hoagland's latest video.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admire his enthusiasm. But he kept seeing metal objects everywhere. And my friends are like, my God, that is metal. And I've been a fossil hunter since I was a kid. So we took some fossils off my shelf and ran outside, got some dirt from the yard, put the fossils in there, half buried. And even fossils of like shells and everything, as you know, they get mineralized.
Sure.
And
right.
My goodness, if you get them in the right light, not only do they look metallic, but, like on shells, some of them have striations or curves. And you could even think it was like a little piece of a sculpture buried, you know. So I'm very glad to hear that you're thinking that some of these might be fossils.
What are the odds, Sir Charles, that some of these artifacts, some of these fossils that you think they're fossils, are truly fossils or are anomalies that look like fossils?
I very strongly believe they're fossils for a number of reasons, and it would, you know, you'd have to read my book to know why. But the thing that really strikes me is how many identical or nearly so structures exist all over the planet. And when you begin to look at, did you come across something that was an artifact or something that was created by biology? Biology makes millions and billions of copies of something very, very easily with no external input. They eat, they grow, they replicate. And so you would easily find numerous duplicates all over in that case. That's just one of the arguments that I find. And what he mentioned, what your caller mentioned, is that he took his fossils, he placed them in soil and changed the illumination and saw how it looked. that's truly a scientific investigation of what you're seeing. And much of what we do in science can be that simple and can yield some very surprising answers. We did a great deal of analysis on what I was finding years ago, just to verify to some degree that what we saw wasn't simply an illusion or chasing shadows.
Let's go back to Murray to see if you had a question. Murray, go ahead.
Well, I guess my last question is, because I do respect Richard Hoagland very much, do you see any what you think is metallic if you've seen his videos or some of his work?
I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe there's any free metal on the planet other than wrecked rovers and landers. I don't personally believe that I've seen anything that tells me there's an artifact that isn't anything other than biology or geology.
Sir Charles, what would be the planet you would love to go to and just search around and see what's there?
Well, Mars sticks up, you know, very easily because the conditions would be quite clement. You could get around in a simple spacesuit very easily. But if I had an opportunity to explore any planet just in our solar system, I think one of the most interesting would be the moon Triton, because it has some very Pluto-like conditions. It's orbiting Neptune, and it's quite a large moon, and there are some fascinating things there, such as nitrogen volcanoes.
And there's probably some water there.
Well, it's extremely cold.
Icy.
So, yes, very icy. And under those conditions, water's a mineral.
But, you know, like that planet that they discovered that is, floating around without its own sun.
Oh, yeah.
It's got an internal heat source.
Well, every planet does to some degree. The core of a planet generally is dense, full of metals and some radioactive naturally occurring isotopes, and they sink to the core and they provide a constant meltdown. So there's the heat of formation and the heat of radioactive decay that heat these planets from the inside. And so it's quite possible there could be pockets of life and water within a planet like that, even though it's in the darkness between the stars.
Wes is in Winchester, Virginia. Hey, Wes, thank you for calling.
Yeah, no problem, man. I just had a question for your guest. You said a couple minutes ago that you think if there was intelligent life, it probably landed from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say for whatever, let's say Curiosity just happens to kick up a little bit of dust and miraculously there's remains of intelligent life, what happens to the thinking here on Earth?
Well, I
like
think
the way we think.
Yeah, this is a very big question. You know, most of the people who object do so on religious grounds. And the funny thing is, most of the religions in our world accept very easily that there are other beings living in the universe. So I'm not really sure how it would play out. What I do know is that the reassurance that we're not alone in the universe could actually be a very positive thing for some and a very negative for others. Some people would immediately feel as if there was hope for us and that we eventually might leave our world and go to other worlds and other solar systems, and that would be an indication of it. And others would feel that we need to be on our guard for things from the sky. So it really depends on your frame of mind.
I think it's interesting, Sir Charles, how religion has made a big turnaround, with the Catholic Church, of course, saying that a belief in extraterrestrial life does not negate one's belief in God. 600 years ago, they would have burned you at the stake.
Well, that's true. And Cardinal Giordano Bruno, I believe, was burned at the stake for professing what he called a multiplicity of worlds. And he was simply saying there are other worlds beside the earth in the sky.
Let's go to Joe in Toronto, Canada now. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi.
Hello.
I was wondering if there's any practicality if they could take a core sample deep down on Mars to see what the composition is and see if there's any or has been any activity like an ice age or something like that that occurred on Earth a long time ago?
That would take a different kind of rover, Charles, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. The hardware to do that sort of sampling and study doesn't exist on the planet right now. NASA did propose they were going to send another rover for 2020. We'll see where that goes. I know a lot of people were pretty unhappy about sending just another rover and not some actual human beings.
If there is intelligent life out there in the universe, and we all think that there is, I would think that the primordial soup is the same, which means that the specimens, the creatures, may be the same. I would think that they would look very close to us, don't you?
Well, I think that that's quite possible, that because our environment and how we live shapes us. And every organism has input from its environment. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to respond to it and live properly. But think about it also from the terms of an artist's box. No matter what colors you have, they're all the same colors, but you can make any number of different paintings. So we could imagine all sorts of organisms. I mean, even on the Earth, we have things as strange as the platypus.
So why did we end up the way we are?
Well, again, it was just a matter of utility from all the evidence that we can see. Consider that in Australia, there are marsupials that have all the same forms, tigers, bears, and rabbits. The kangaroo is the equivalent of the rabbit, as non-marsupial animals in the rest of the planet. So we see, even on Earth, parallel evolution, where very similar forms arise under very different conditions because the environment they live in dictates what they will become.
What's the future hold for us for space exploration? Are we going to get some things done?
Absolutely, and it's all basically happening in the commercial realm. We can see that Bob Bigelow's working on lunar colony designs and possibly expanding the International Space Station with his inflatable modules. And
yeah.
Elon Musk, of course, is flying more stuff, and he's got ships going to the space station on a fairly regular basis. So there are a lot of companies that in the commercial market that are expanding what we can do in space, and I think that we're going to see huge growth in the next 5 years.
If you were invited to go to Mars for free, doesn't cost you money, you're not going to have to spend millions, would you go?
Could I maintain my business contacts and do my work?
Sure.
That's the big
question.
It would
be a quick trip.
I'd absolutely go, yes.
Let's go to Robert in Parker, Arizona. Final call. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, I was just wondering, if panspermia happened, maybe from Mars, on one of their probes that came to our planet, maybe our planet was spawned from bacteria or contamination from their spacecraft.
You cannot rule that out, Robert, at all. Would you agree, Sir Charles?
Well, it can't be ruled out, but if anything on Mars was that advanced, it would be roughly the same age as our planet already. So we know that life on Earth has been around at least 3.8 billion years just from the fossils we've been able to identify here. It is more likely that some organisms were carried from Earth to Mars and from Mars to Earth on meteorites over the course of history.
And the big question is, of course, how did it all get here? Comets?
Well, some of it obviously was carried by comets. You know, organic matter is falling out of space all the time by comets and meteorites. And that's interesting because they say they haven't found any organic molecules on Mars, yet we know the stuff is drifting out of the sky all the time. So that really answers, I mean, it asks a lot of questions. Why can I not detect the material that should be there?
Would you give out your website, Sir Charles?
Yes, I would. It's schultzlaboratories.com, and it's spelled S-H-U-L-T-S. And, of course, I'd also like to hope that a lot of you people will buy my book, Fossil Hunter's Guide to Mars, as a Christmas gift.
It's a great book, by the way.
Thank you, George.
Good job. Thanks, Sir Charles.
Thank you.
Sir Charles Schultz. Now, when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to the Sinatra Club. That's right. You're all invited, so get ready. It is not what you think at all. The underline of the story, My Life Inside the New York Mafia, Sal Polizzi joins us as we talk about this incredible story. So sit back, enjoy yourself, and get ready for another ride right here on Coast to Coast AM.